This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a series of content that we will be providing over the course of possibly a few months. This will be specifically around how to talk to lawyers about e-discovery data. There should be four pieces in total in this series. Part one will be specifically about collections, and what this group will be discussing is two scenarios and their responses to what they find most valuable in those specific cases as how to speak with and collaborate with lawyers as it relates to these different topics. So I'm going to hand it over to Chuck, who's going to share these scenarios, and we're going to do some introductions and dive right in. Chuck?
All right. Thanks, Nicole. I am Chuck Neal. I am the litigation support and e-discovery manager at Keating, Muthing, and Kleekamp in Cincinnati, Ohio. And we have three panelists today, Kate Cullum, Jennifer Bernstein, and Cameron Herzog. Jennifer, could you introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Chuck. I'm Jen Bernstein. I work at JP Morgan Chase. I'm in the legal discovery management team as part of the legal department, the bank. We handle all things discovery related to litigations, internal investigations, and other matters that may involve discovery. I lead a team of attorneys that are aligned with the government and investigations and regulatory actions of the legal department, where we assist on all discovery requests related to those types of matters.
Great, thank you. Kate, could you introduce yourself?
Hi. Yes, absolutely. My name is Kate Cullum. I also work at JP Morgan along with Jen, also part of the legal discovery management team. And I am the head of the U.S. discovery operations team. I'm based in Delaware.
Great. Thank you. Cameron, can you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name's Cameron Herzog. I'm at Brownstein Rask in Portland, Oregon. I run the IT department there, and I get involved in most of the litigation data that comes in.
Great, thank you. We have two scenarios that we're going to discuss today. The first one is a scenario where the client is a financial services company. In this scenario, the client is being sued in a class action where the plaintiffs are alleging your client did not properly compensate them for PPP loans in which they were a referral agent. The plaintiff wants all communications, including email, hard copy, text message, and potentially all ephemeral messages that discuss the PPP loans. The client did a first pass to identify potential custodians, and they identified 25 individuals. And we're going to discuss the next steps. Jennifer, could you give your perspective on this from a financial services firm?
Sure. Looking at this scenario, I would say that the next step would be for counsel to discuss scoping down the request to a smaller set of key custodians, as well as discussing scoping the data types that they're asking for. Not all parties are going to need to collect text messages and certainly not ephemeral messages. So email might be enough for this investigation. Speaking from the perspective coming from a financial services company, a lot of large companies and even law firms might have their own BYO device policy, which could further complicate collecting text messages and those types of data. So it might be advisable to discuss in the negotiations with counsel, we can scope out text messages, at least at the onset of the investigation. Other things that jumped out at me in this scenario were the hard copy documents. So normally, if those needed to be produced, it would be because that's the only format that the documents, that type of data could be found in. So if there are presentations or other materials in someone's office or some sort of supporting information that wouldn't have already been digitized, we'd have to consider the costs involved in collecting those and scanning them to turn them into an electronic format for review and production. So that's a third item to consider in conversations. And then much more commonly, parties would want to discuss date ranges and search terms so that you can limit the amount of data you would want to produce for these 25 individuals. Depending on the date range, it could be pretty voluminous. And it's very common for parties to agree on a set list of search terms as a first crack at what they would need to collect and review for production. But then there are other cost considerations and collection considerations that I think Kate can speak to as well.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jen. So Jen is right. I think with when there's a large request for data, it makes a lot of sense to try to control that by some scoping The more data that's collected, the more that will have to be processed, hosted, and reviewed, all of which will drive up e-discovery costs. A tiered or a prioritized approach to collection might even make sense, even within the 25 custodians, which would permit the information that's gained from the preliminary rounds of review to sort of inform the collection strategy of additional custodians, including the date ranges and search terms that Jen had mentioned. If this is a financial institution, at least some of the custodians may be regulated, and therefore, they should have their electronic communications archive. Others may not be regulated, depending upon their role within the financial institution. So the availability of data would therefore be subject to the parameters of any legal hold that was implemented and corporate data retention policies, which would be important for the litigator to be aware of.
Thanks very much. Cameron, do you have anything to add to this? Or it's a different view, actually.
I think they did a good job covering all the points, especially at a low level. I represent a small / medium-sized firm, depending on which city you're in. I guess in Portland, it's a medium-sized firm, Brownstein Rask. One thing I like to look at is the big picture here when the case comes in. Like, what exactly are we trying to provide to the other side here? What has the judge ordered that we are supposed to give to them? Do we have an agreed list of keywords, topics? How are we going to perform those searches? And then what are the technologies that we're going to have to run this search through? Can we do our email searches on the back end, or are we visiting everybody's computers and archives? There is somewhere between a little bit of work and a lot of work, depending on how all of this is structured. Since we've got 25 different custodians, we're going to have to look at each one of those individually and see, well, are we talking about paper files that they've got in their office? Are we talking about electronic records? Ephemeral messages are something but that's a tricky one. It might be something that we have to send out and have that scraped off of the device itself. The data that we're going to produce, are we going to be required to produce natives, or is that something that we can image and then produce? So we are either running it through a system on our side, or we are sending everything directly to them. And that controls a lot of the amount of the metadata that we're handing over, whether we're required to give that or not. You want to be careful about not providing more information than you need to, because you might be including things that are considered confidential, and the attorneys themselves are not always as familiar as the IT department about the types of data that are going over. Let's see if there's anything else. I think that's about it.
Great. Thanks very much. Kate or Jennifer, do you have anything to add after Cameron's comments?
No, I think he covered most of the key topics that you should consider at this stage of the litigation.
I agree. I think probably from the perspective of the litigator, it would make sense for him or for her to sort of inquire what the client does actually retain. What do they have available? I think in terms of chat channels, for example, this may be something that the institution retains, or maybe they don't. So I think maybe looking, and as Cameron said, ephemeral messages would be a real challenge. So probably delving in a little bit and just ensuring that the attorney is clear on what actually available at the institution would make sense.
Yeah, I think that does come up after the fact more often than not. And sometimes it comes up so far down the line that you really wish you'd addressed it sooner. The attorney isn't familiar with all of the technology that the client is using, or the technology that's going to be used to extract that data. And it really is something that they need at least a brief overview on upfront, so that they can be asking for data in the right format. Like, how is the client going to give us the email? Can they extract the whole mailbox? Are they going to give us a login to their Facebook account? You know, in this case, we could certainly have Facebook accounts involved. And that's a very simple process. If you know what you're doing, you can export that whole account. But I've seen a lot of screenshots come in from cell phones, and that might be how you're collecting the ephemeral messages. But sometimes there's better ways, and there's ways to collect that information so that it will hold up in court, and they won't say, well, this has probably been tampered with. Look, this screenshot doesn't line up with this other screenshot. And so it is a good idea to have that conversation with the attorney and say, okay, these are the types of data that we might be collecting. These are the methods that we normally use to collect that information, and maybe even show them some examples of that information.
Great, thanks. So let's move on to the second scenario. In this instance, your firm represents a state agency which there are suing multiple pharmaceutical companies that manufacture a highly addictive drug. And you believe that the defendants will try to, quote, bury you in paper, because that's been their MO in the past. So obviously printing everything is not an option. How will you handle discovery? Let's kick it off with Jennifer.
Thanks, Chuck. So I think this is exactly where you would use something like an ESI stipulation. You want to meet with the other side and put down in writing an agreement on discovery. What kind of materials are you collecting, the formats of the materials, and as far as you could go deeper into search terms and other scoping, as we discussed in the first scenario, but you definitely want to make sure that you guys are on the same page, that the collections and productions would be in an electronic format. In this case, it's much more cost efficient and probably quicker. Even though state agencies may be living in a different time in terms of technology, we might want to push for electronic format. It's not that novel of an idea at this point. We would hope most people are up to speed. And if there are certain things that just aren't digitized, then that's another time where you could discuss if that would be acceptable between the parties of when you would actually produce paper or collect paper. And in terms of the old school bury you in productions, I think if the parties do meet and come to some sort of an agreement about the scope of what is discoverable, that would be one way to try to retain some sort of control on what you'll be receiving for review that's responsive to the investigation. The other consideration is just the deep pockets. Here you have a state agency versus pharmaceutical companies who can probably afford to take on a longer and more burdensome discovery process here. So as someone on the state agency side, you'd also want to keep that in mind, that you have serious cost considerations, and that would form so much of what you would agree to in terms of discovery.
Great, thanks. Cameron, what would you do in this scenario?
A lot of it relates back to what I mentioned earlier, except it's sort of the flip side of it. You really want to hone in on what type of data you're trying to get and then have it as organized as possible. Any organization that you can get the other side to do is going to save you, multitudes more work on your own side. So agreeing on all electronic or like a combination of electronic and paper data incoming, are they going to be willing to scan in that paper? That's something that you'll have to agree on. And then it really needs to be sorted by custodian too. And so that's, each user or each party, if you can get that all sorted as it's coming in, then you're going to be able to run your searches a lot easier later, rather than just having them search their entire email database for keywords without any regard of who is the custodian for that data. It's going to save you a lot of time there later. There's negotiations that go on back and forth involving the format and the expansiveness of the discovery. As far as collecting that actual data, having them send you a hard drive versus boxes of paper versus a slew of memory sticks, that can affect you quite a bit on your end as far as how much work it's going to take you. Ideally, what we like to do is get it all electronically through some sort of a Dropbox style service. Citrix ShareFile is one that a lot of law firms use, and you can have them upload multiple archives in there, and there's no real size limits or anything like that. And that makes it a lot easier to work with rather than trying to maintain this physical inventory. And then the types of files, try to collect the natives as often as possible. If you don't, then you are not necessarily going to be able to figure out who a custodian is on an individual image unless it's identified. If you're getting some sort of a data dump out of a Relativity or some other type of litigation review software system, that should be exported in a format that your system can then import. And you'd be surprised, but there are no real great standards in this regard. So it's I don't know if this is all stuff that you'd have to also train the attorney on when they're working. A lot of the times it's the IT department that gets involved when this data is coming in. So, but the attorney involved is definitely going to have to be aware of it. But that's sort of at least the technical perspective of the issues that I see when that stuff's coming in.
Great, thanks. Kate, did you have anything to add to Cameron and Jennifer's explanation?
Yeah, really not much more to add. Yeah, I think in this day and age, it makes most sense to have received data electronically. There's so many more benefits, so much more efficient. Avoiding being buried in paper at all costs would be would be ideal.
I would just add one thing that Cameron pointed out that I think is a good point that would differ whether you're at a law firm, a state agency, or corporation is everyone has different review and hosting platforms. So being very aware with speaking to your litigation support team or whether it's your IT, what type of database are we loading this into will inform what format you need it to be produced to you. And that should also be discussed ahead of time and negotiated. So depending on if you're loading it into an in-house hosted Relativity or a third-party vendor, a production format in concordance with a metadata export that'll tell you might be preferable to getting all receiving all natives because of the size of them. But again, in Cameron's example at the law firm, if you're not doing that and you're receiving the files in their original format, that would make sense as well to have natives. But it's important at the onset to know how you'll be reviewing this data and what you'll be doing with it.
Yeah, you can get a huge Windows directory full of natives that can, which is great because they're natives, but that can actually be less useful than something that's been loaded into Concordance and then exported out with the metadata, because then you're going to get more information about, well, the original time and date stamps might be preserved. You'll get more information about who the custodians of those documents were, that type of stuff. So while natives are nice, a PST archive for email, that's great because that contains custodian information, but a huge Windows file structure, it's not always the best.
All right. Well, that, I think, concludes our discussion on collections. I want to thank everyone for hopping on and explaining your perspectives. And then I believe our next session will be introduced here shortly.
Perfect. Thank you, everybody. And as we mentioned at the beginning, this is going to be a short story of topics. This one was collections, and the next one to follow will be volume and cost, specifically with processing and review. So be on the lookout. The format might be a podcast like this, or it might be a short presentation, but we will be sure to conduct them all together as we move through these different topics. And we hope that you share this with others and you found it valuable. So hope you have a great day. And see you on the next one.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.